Pleated river red and parted sea, with gyrating twig tides on crystal shores, washing colored grapes of harvest. Raised glass smashed against salted reefs, ceremony begins. Reagan chimes, billow in salted wind, modest bell dress, upon morning horizon, in sanctuary. Circle of insanity, caught like bees, circling hives in a lounge, with frozen pose. Remember the sleepy symphony, beaten on our eyes, with an old story, how we wanted to dance among the midnight harvest. Of delicate fertility, sleeping in the crib, under our cupboard, as Coltrane serpent sacks, played love supreme, boats floating carelessly, quite wooden, no salt water under it, drunk with desire. And in need of some paint, piled age, driftwood. Nerve endings turned on as Christmas lights play like musical instruments and toiling soldiers, beat drums, strings resonated through echoes. With the composer stepping into fire.
Well, I'm the talk about the place in the tick. You have stumbled upon Soulless Fire, and we are a group on allpoetry.com, and you have stumbled upon the show Delving in a Moment with Cal, A.P. Taylor, myself, and the wonderful Osama Cheever. Hello, Osama. How are you?
Hello, AP. How are you?
I am very well. I have to say, I think Cal has outdone himself this morning.
Yes.
This evening.
Yes, it was amazing. It was amazing, the music and the poem. Was,
yeah.
I was stunned, actually. Very professional.
He's got the full reverberation going.
In the piece,
and the reverberation was great, but I have to say, I think it was just completely appropriate for the words and the story you were telling, Osama. Right?
Yes, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was so professional. The music was really stunning, and the poem is like so beautiful, very beautifully written, and as usual. But this one is like he's outdone himself, actually.
He has. I was quite surprised when I started to hear it and what he was doing, Osama, because he's, you know, I know he's, you know, been mucking around with instruments and desks and all that sort of stuff, but he's really... He's jumped the shark, I think, Osama.
Exactly.
In the old, he's put himself in a completely different place. So,
a different level altogether. In sanctuary versions of insanity, you know, like these two stanzas are smashing, really. Ringing chimes, pillowing salted wind, bodies bell dress upon morning horizon in sanctuary, a circle of insanity, caught like bees, circling hives in a lounge with frozen pose. Remembering the sleepy symphony beating on our eyes with an old story. Wow, how we wanted to dance among midnight harvest of delicate fertility. Wow.
Really? Oh, words in it. karma. I was just sort of blown away by the words, but also the way that
the music and the whole production.
So now I don't think that Cal's going to be joining us today, but he's probably already done his best work, Osama. I mean, he could come and join us now, and we'd say, well, look, you've got a leave pass because you've done that.
Unbelievable.
Putting all that to one side, we have a show, and we have a show with lots of different poems, Osama, and maybe you can talk about all those different things that we are celebrating today in the show. Hello, Osama. Hello, Osama. Osama, can you hear me? She was there 1 minute, I swear, and then she wasn't the next. Just one tick. Let me pick up the phone here. Osama, can you hear me? Hello, Osama. Well, this is going to make it fun. If it's just me, I can talk to myself, I guess. But it's not the same. Osama, do you want to call back in, please? Because your line has, we can't hear you. If you can hear me, we can't hear you. So it would be good if you could call back in. Okay. So, meantime, I should say a little bit about our group. Soul Asylum is a group on allpoetry.com. And we have a group of talented and eclectic writers from all around the world. And we, in this particular hosts in no particular order, Cal from Germany, Osama from Egypt, myself from Australia, and we have people all over the world who are in our group.
Hello? Hello?
Osama, hello? I can hear you again. How are you?
Okay. I don't know what's the problem, but, something is happening.
I don't know
anyway,
what it is either,
can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes. And I was sitting there and I was talking to myself all of a sudden, but
I heard you.
It's the first sign of madness, Osama, when you're sitting there talking to yourself, the worst sign is that if you actually start, responding to yourself. Anyway, putting that to one side.
I'm about to throw to you
to talk about all the celebrations. Yes.
I was saying we've been having lots of elections the past couple of months, and this is. Can you hear me, AP? Hello.
Yes, I can.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, hello.
So yes, you can hear me, right?
Yes, I can.
Hello. All right.
Yes, I can hear you.
So
yes.
We've been celebrations lately. And we're still spring, and are still in Tinawati. Tonight, our main theme, we're going to celebrate all these things. We have a poem about Ramadan, poem about Easter, poem, some poems about some history, and from poets all over the world. And actually, we have a main theme. We usually have a main theme, but tonight, nature, Mother Nature, is a kind of a main theme. So that's it. If you like, we can start our reading list.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay.
You
can hear me. Yeah. Okay.
And it's a little
right.
rough
so,
sometimes. I can't. Yes.
You can hear me now?
So,
I don't know what's happening.
I can now. Yeah, it's just coming in and out a little bit. That's all.
Okay. Anyway, so our first poem tonight is by Partner. Partner is his username, Dr. Nisar Ahmed. And he lives in the United States, so his poem is about Ramadan and Laylat al-Qadr. Laylat al-Qadr, you know, in the holiest night in Ramadan, where Muslims ask yes. for the forgiveness, all right? It's the holy night. We don't know which the exact, but the Prophet said it's one of the 10 nights. So observe it, we try to do our best, pray more, you know, try to be more pious and, you know, observe, do this, you know, prayers, reading Quran and things like that. Anyway, so this poem is by Dr. Nisar Ahmad, and it's Ramadan, and Laylat is the night of, so he goes, holy of holy night, Laylat God and sins and mercy for all, falls in the month of Ramadan, of service of bounty, proud to come in this world and the world after, when all would be in the company of the Master. End of poem. Kamaran, I think, is a Persian word which means successful or accepted, actually. Okay. So yep. This is our poem tonight, Abdul Ramadan.
Well,
hello?
Firstly, what I should... It's a little rough, the line, Osama, but I was able to follow the
okay.
poem.
Okay, would you comment on this poem, and I'll call back,
yes.
all right, while you're commenting. Okay, I'll call
but
back.
Let's do that. So I think the thing I'd say is that the wonderful thing that I've got from reading the poems of the last several weeks in the show is a much better sense of the holistic nature of Ramadan and the all encompassing belief and view of Muslims helping other Muslims and helping other people around the world. The lovely thing about this poem is that it talks about hello. Is that Osama?
Hello. Sorry, AP. I don't know what's happening, but I hope now it's better.
No, it's much, much better. It's much, much better. And I was
okay.
just starting to talk about this piece. And
yes.
I think what I was talking about, Osama, was just the holistic nature of the poem. It's not just talking about a month of celebration and a month of sharing and a month of giving. It's talking about something a lot broader, and it's talking about something that is all encompassing from not just this life but lives after, and there's something quite telling about a poem that talks about, you know, something so big and so broad, and does it in a way that I think is a way that other people can understand, and that's
yes,
for me
yes.
what I like about
yes. it. Yeah, you know what? I always, when I write about my own beliefs, I try to make it understandable to others. Because, you know, the problem is why people, you know, when they don't understand each other, they feel alienated. And it brings out so much misunderstanding and misconcepts and things like that. So I make it a point, and I realize that most of the people, especially Muslims on the site, they do the same thing. We are just trying to express exactly what is it all about, our beliefs. And, you know, the strange thing is that we have, as people of faith and even spiritual people, we have more in common than more in difference, actually. So this was
yeah.
a very nice poem, a very simple, just, you know, explaining exactly what Laylat al-Qadr and what Ramadan is all about. It's all about asking, you know, fasting, praying, and asking God for forgiveness. And I think fasting is in all religions, but maybe a different way. And I think all people of faith ask God for forgiveness, for his mercy, for peace. And I wish that people of faith, I don't understand why people of faith would be, you know, would have any animosities towards each other. We have to respect each other. It's actually the same God. We all worship the same God. It is only one God who created this universe. So there is nothing really to dispute about. What we have in common is more than what we have in difference. And, you know, and the difference is man-made, actually, because it's not strange, but it proves that it's, you know, all faiths, they have the same commandments, exactly, and the same the same meanings. So we should concentrate on the things that bring us together than the things that bring us apart. So thank you, Dr. Nisar, for your lovely poem, and wish you, you know, to be all your fasting and prayers to be accepted, and I wish you would find Laylatul Qadr, you know, because we don't meet it all the time. Some people feel it, some people, you know, go through visions, experiences of Laylatul Qadr, but these are the lucky ones. So I wish him to meet Laylatul Qadr, inshallah. Anyway, we have another poet celebrating Easter, and it's by a new member and a friend of mine, Ruby Marianne. Her username is Ruby, but her name is Marianne. And, you know, I was looking all over the site for a poem about Easter, and I found it. She wrote one, so I was really pleased. It's a short one, but I thought it's beautiful. And I was happy to find it. And Ruby's from Ireland. You know, tonight we have a lot of people from America, from Great Britain. We have a couple of poets from Great Britain and America tonight, and from Canada as well. So tonight, usually we have more poets from India and other places in the world, but tonight it's mostly Americans, British, and Canadian. Okay. So would you like to read this one? Would you like to read this one about Easter by Ruby?
I will read it. Osama, this is a short brevity, Easter, by Ruby2446, and it goes a little bit like this. Every child's chocolate dream, a time for family and friends. Spring is in the air, the lambs are bleating. Early flowers are blooming, religion may be renewing. End poem.
Yeah, you know, this is an acrostic. And would you like to explain what's an acrostic?
I will. An acrostic is where the first letter, usually, of every word that's used in the poem can be spelt into either the title or the subject that the person is writing about. So in this particular case, every being E, the early religion, the first letter of each spelling out the word Easter.
Yeah, you know, I try to write an acrostic. Two forms I don't seem to get, you know, acrostic and haiku. though they are short prefixes, but honestly, they need a lot of skills.
I'm with you on haiku. I've got to say, Osama, I'm with you on haiku because I can't make head nor tail of haiku. I have tried and I have tried and tried again. Yeah? And I just can't make it work, you know?
Though you are very good with forms, you're very good with forms, but I don't know why haiku especially. Anyway, so So I really love this poem. And you know what? She exactly like Dr. Nisar's poem. It's just, you know, open to everyone to understand, to accept. And,
yes,
you know, and she's like bringing out the bright part of Easter, which, you know, in Egypt we celebrate Easter, we celebrate Christmas because, you know, a lot of Christians in Egypt, as I told you before, so they celebrate with us, we celebrate with them. In Egypt, it's not very, tight up because we've been living together all for ages, you know. And and Egypt, ancient Egypt was Pharaonic, and then came the Coptic period, and then came the Islamic period. So all these three, through thousands of years, civilizations merged together and came out the Egyptian, the modern Egyptian. So.
Yes.
We even used to be more open, you know, the past, 20, 30 years since Afghanistan and the emerging of Al-Qaeda and, things became a little bit, a lot of people became fundamentalists. But this is not the case.
Yes.
It wasn't ever the case in Egypt. And we were affected, of course. But thank God we are back as we were, hopefully. So what I like about this poem is that, I like that she started with the happiness and the celebration of children, the chocolate.
Yes.
And, there is a very old celebration in ancient Egypt called, and we still, celebrate, it's called Shem Nisim. You know, it's spring, springtime. The ancient Egyptians celebrated springtime big time. And this is exactly, it always comes in the time of Easter as well. So people in Egypt, they celebrate spring, they celebrate Easter. And so, it's really beautiful. I like the way she put it. And, coloring the eggs and the chocolate and things like that. People go out to the gardens. Exactly what she's saying, the celebration and the chocolate for children, the spring, the air of spring, and the flowers blooming, and religion may be renewing. So it could be all religions, actually. So I like that. I really liked it, though it's a brevity, but it was very skillful. Like it was in an acrostic form. Beside, it was very delightful, and it was open for everyone. Like she's containing everyone. She's containing the children, the spring, the religions, the renewal.
Yes.
Though it's just a brevity, but it's very skillful, and I love that she's she's the only one really that I found who wrote about Easter, so I was delighted. And she's containing everyone, and it's beautiful, delightful, skillful poem. So really, really happy to have Ruby with us. Now she's a member of our Soul Asylum as well. She's been a friend for a while. She's a great commentator. When she reads someone's poem, she really is an excellent commentator. So this was lovely. What do you think?
I really like the acrostic form, Osama, and I really like the way that the poem it very quickly and easily transitioned to from what it meant for kids to what it meant for everybody. And there's something quite nice about that, particularly in short brevities where you can just, transfer your way quite quickly. And that poem does that very well.
Yeah, it was lovely, lovely. I truly enjoyed it. And she mentioned spring. And on the occasion of spring, I have a poem written. It's called A Time to Remember. So can you put it on board or are you doing it? All right. And tell me when you're ready. Sure.
I will, one moment, while I grab that poem, because I always like to have poems ready there for the listeners who are there. So this is A Time to Remember by, of course, Osama.
It's a gold winner, by the way. A couple of golds.
I'm surprised, Osama. It's up there on the board now.
Okay. So it goes a little bit like this. A Time to Remember. When spring arrives with its lily touch, daisy smile and tulip fragrance, metaphors are drawn from nature as dewdrops falling on petals of roses, inspiring jewels of words like a string of pearls in remembrance of days that were full of beauty and aromatic freshness, when the hand of love wrapped itself around us and shining stars orbited the moon until dawn comes. The sun rose embroidered with golden rays, embracing branches of trees with its tender morning breeze, warming our young hearts. End of poem.
Very lovely. Very lovely. I mean, I think there's something quite beautiful about the spring bulbs that you're showing there, Osama, and of course, in order to have spring bulbs, you've got to do all the work in autumn. You've got to go and prepare the ground and put the bulbs in and make sure that they've got all the proper things around them, water and fertilizer, in order for them to grow. So those beautiful spring flowers don't just appear. They, of course, appear because you've spent the time to put them in the ground earlier in the first place, and you have to wait for those for the sun to shine and the water to wrap their arms, as you really beautifully say in the poem, around those flowers, and then they arrive in the spring, and there's something quite lovely about that, and it does touch people when they see those flowers, and that touch is because of the beauty of the flowers, and I think also because of the work that's been put in to get them.
Yeah. Are you into gardening?
Funnily enough, I am not, Osama. I have probably the biggest black thumb known to person kind. So if you want a very hardy bush or shrub to will be no longer with us in this world, then I am the one, Paul. I have the opposite green thumb. I have a black thumb.
Okay. You know, Cal is into gardening big time.
Yes, I understand. I've seen some of his flowers in these images on his poems. He is.
You know, especially vegetables. He likes to grow his own vegetables, tomato, onions, carrots, whatever.
Yes.
And, you know, he sends me pictures of his vegetables, and they look amazing. They're the biggest tomatoes ever, most beautiful carrots and vegetables, you know, because he doesn't put any chemicals on it or something. They're natural. They have a name. They have a name for organic. Yes, that's it. So, anyway, and you know, something also I said in this poem, that metaphors are drawn from nature. Actually, I always find myself drawing metaphors from nature when I write about love or write about spring or write about most of the time, especially love and spring and, you know, things like that. I always find myself like drawing really, truly metaphor from nature. You know, like rain is a metaphor for tears, it's a metaphor for growth, it's a metaphor for many things. Like, so we always, you know, find meanings, or a metaphor is actually trying to express a meaning of something in a way that would make it easier to be understood or more relatable. So I always find myself when I write that I use, nature as a metaphor, like rain, clouds. I think most of us, rain, clouds, seas, rivers, oceans. Oh, I have so many poems with ocean in it. Oceans, yeah, of emotions, depths of oceans. Yeah. There is always some sort of ocean I'm writing about. Anyway, that's love. You know what? I would like if we read your poem, AP. You've written a poem tonight,
well,
for us.
I have, but I've got another one that I was going to put in because you were talking about metaphors. We'll see if we do the other one.
Okay.
You just done a poem about metaphors and water and all that stuff, yeah? And
yeah,
we were talking,
okay,
about acrostics. Yeah, we were talking,
yes,
about acrostics. An acrostic poem can be the first letter or it can be the first word. Okay,
yes,
so you can use a poem to have a word in it, and those words can create a statement, or you can use the first letter. Yeah, so going back to that, I've actually got an acrostic that I did a little bit ago that actually
that
uses
that would be wonderful. Can you please put it on the reading list?
I will put it on the reading list in one tick. I'm going to put it on the board now and then the reading list straight after because I know you're a stickler for these things. And
okay,
you know, if I don't put it on, you'll go and find me and track me down and make sure I do. So it's on the reading list now. It's on the board as well. So this is called Cradling Broken Glass. And it goes...
Give me a second, AP.
You've got to get that to load. Okay.
This is
an acrostic and the first metaphor. Here we go.
I got it, but I want to ask you... Yes. Yes. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Sasama,
I just want to ask you, is there a bit of an echo in the background?
No. No, it's very clear.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's very clear. This is Cradling Broken Glass. It goes a little bit like this. Now, the skies are awash in shades of azure blue. My taste stirs from waters you've mixed with rosé. Bitter guys in a pitcher which reminds me of you. Hands on a champagne glass, sea shadows array. Chafe my lips on this burning nectar of our spoils. Beneath an incandescent sun line tendrils of ice. The squat decanter of whiskey readied of my toils, the clouds you dissolve, in candy cinnamon and spice. Of an even division of toils and labour sliced daily, what remnants of the chases of lemon and lime? Was a drink and conversation held once so gaily, everything red and aqua, stepped to black, by design.
Wow. Well, this expresses all what we've been talking about, the acrostics and the metaphors from nature, but I want you to explain to me exactly the acrostic in this poem.
I will. So I was given a quote to write this to, and it's a quote from a song from Pearl Jam, from the song Black, and the quote is, "Now my bitter hands chafe beneath the clouds of what was everything." That's the quote from the song.
Okay.
So if you go down the first word of every line, now my bitter hands chafe beneath the clouds of what was everything. I've actually replayed the quote that I was given in the first words of each of the lines.
Okay, I got it. It's beautiful, yeah, very beautiful. You just wrote it 17 days ago. This is one of your new writes.
It's one of my newer writes, and that's why when you were talking about acrostics, I thought, well, I don't do very many of them, but I did have done one recently, so that I thought I'd put that one up.
It's beautiful. I love it. And it also expresses it's a metaphorical poem, actually. And
yes, it is.
But the last line was a little bit, you know, it moved me very much. Everything red and aqua swept to black by design. So this is a bit, you know, would you like to explain it to me? Because I felt it's sad, is it?
Yeah. Well, look, I started with the image that I was given, Osama. So if you look at the image above, it's got half the world blue
half
the world.
Yes, I got it.
And when the red and blue mix, you get the black. yeah, and I actually thought of that in terms of people. I thought of that in terms of people, and I thought of people who, and I don't know whether other people say this, but when I think of red people, I think of emotional people. When I think of blue people, I think of cool people and factual people. And when you put them together, it can be a horrible mess. And that's why I thought about the black.
Okay. It was the picture a prompt, or you just chose it?
The picture was part of the prompt, was part of the prompt, as well as the quote. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, when you read the poem, if you don't understand exactly the background, for example, I love writing for picture prompts or quote prompts, because you don't always have new ideas. So a picture can really, bring something, a thought, a feeling out of you. So is a quote. So this is what was like a prompt. Can you hear me, AP? Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So this is very skillful. Like this is a multiple prompt. It's like a picture prompt. And, I didn't realize that, but the last line, attracted my attention. So when you explained it to me, now I can see the meaning and the picture. And also it's a code prompt. Yes. And also you made an acrostic out of it. So this is very skillful. People who are not into poetry, like they would just read it and say how beautiful, or relate to it, or enjoy the words or the structure or the language. But if they understand how skillful this poem is, really skillful, like it's a picture prompt, it's a quote prompt, and it's an acrostic. So it's a metaphorical poem. So this is really a brilliant write. I love it. And yes, thank you for sharing it with us. I really, really love it. And you're a wonderful, you're one of my favorite poets, and you're a very, very dear friend. And people have to know that I respect you and I love you as a person, and all your support, your kindness, your help, and, sometimes I don't know what to say. Just thank you, AP, and I enjoyed this so, so much. Lovely, lovely poem.
Thank you.
And, it's beautiful. So we are having a great show tonight. And I truly, this came like the cherry on top of the cake. Okay. So, this is lovely. It's a picture prompt and a code prompt and acrostic. Wow. For me, this is wow. Thank you so much. We have another poem about nature. It's called Tulips Twilight.
Yes.
Twilight. By Crystal Etch. Yes. And I think it's also Crystal, this is the first time we share one of her poems, and it's also a gold winner. So it's beautiful, and I would like you to read it, please, AP.
I will. I've just put it up on the board now, and I have to say I've been following Crystal very closely, because she has been a member of one of the other groups I'm in for several years, and she's just writing beautiful at the minute, so...
Yeah, it's beautiful. Really actually, I'm getting to know her, and she's from the United States, and this poem is a gold winner, two golds actually. So I was really touched by it, and coincidentally, the theme tonight is spring, nature, Easter, and so this was just perfect for our show tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is Tulips Twilight by Crystal H, and it goes a little bit like this. Tangerine sunlight beckons on her window, dressed in floral curtains from head to toe. Pink tulips dance like flamingos, brushing stems with a rapid flow. Evergreen growth below honeydew skies, with fluttering wings of yellow butterflies. Her fingers tiptoe on the glassy sunrise as she blinks. Her blue blurry eyes. doorstep mat painted with pink petals, the strawberry tulips and carnations settle. Fields of flowers bleed on the pastel petals, kissing her blushing cheeks and freckles. Miles of meadows draw the sunlight with charcoal chalk, dusting peach white. Her hands tickle the feather's flight as she embraces the tulip's twilight. End poem.
Absolutely beautiful. You know, this is really so beautiful. It's like full of imagery, metaphors, spring, and it's a rhyming poem, and you don't feel it. You know, sometimes I'm not into rhyme, but some rhyming poems, they just flow so beautifully. You can't even feel, you know,
yes,
that this is a rhyming poem, because so smooth, so elegant, so such
yes,
a beautiful poem, a beautiful language. The language, the words chosen are perfect for the theme of, nature. And this is what we are talking about, nature. We draw metaphors from nature and butterflies. It's such a delightful, beautifully structured and full of imagery, of metaphors, and the rhyming flows so beautifully. And really, it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And it speaks about spring in every way, the flowers, the butterflies, the sunrise, the petals. Like, she didn't leave anything out.
it's absolutely
beautiful.
Look, I have a sort of pet thing, Asama, and that is that we've all been there when we've seen people who start rhyming and it feels sort of pat, and you get stuck on the rhymes because they're made to fit the standard. But when people get really, really good at rhyming, it actually just flows so beautifully that you forget the rhyme is there at all. You just notice that it's
exactly
a lovely cadence and flow.
And
you're not distracted by the rhyme. The rhyme just becomes part of what the message is, and that's what's happening here. You know, it's such a beautifully expressed written poem that the rhyme just sort of comes along for the ride with the story.
Exactly.
And when you've got that, that's the best sort of poetry for me. I love it when people get to the point where they can rhyme and you don't notice the rhyme. You notice what the beautiful flow and cadence is, and that's what poetry is. You know, I really
Yeah, she did that beautifully, you know. I love all forms of poetry, and I love rhyming, but I can't rhyme, and I hate it when I feel it's forced rhyme, like, for instance, the end word rhyme, and it doesn't just fit in with the meaning of the rest of the line or the coming line or whatever. I hate this. And, you know, sometimes I rhyme, but I rhyme naturally, like inner rhyme mostly. They just come out. I never intentionally, because I tried intentionally and it didn't work for me at all. So I find myself rhyming unintentionally, you know, just comes out with the flow of thoughts and words, and it's sometimes inner rhymes or end of line rhymes, but never forced, because I can't do it. Some people can, by the way. You know, it needs a lot of skill, but this is perfect rhyming.
Yes.
I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
You don't feel it, you know? And it's so perfect, and it blends with the meaning and the mood and the rhythm and everything. So, hello, Crystal. Thanks, sweetheart. Beautiful, beautiful poem, and beautifully written, masterfully written. my comment to her, a masterfully written rhyming poem that flowed smoothly and painted with words, a marvelous portrait of nature's beauty. That was my first impression. This is why I wanted to share it. Congrats on the gold, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. I loved it, and it was beautiful, and I hope all our listeners will enjoy it. We have also another poem which is really, really beautiful, and it's by Phil the Poet, and he's British. He's British, but, you know, he's one also of my favorite poets, and he's such a wonderful person and a wonderful friend. I think we shared, I'm sure we shared a couple of poems written by him before, but it's been a while.
Yes.
So while looking for, searching for, you know, preparing the reading list, I always found, you know, stumbled on this poem, and I felt it's lovely because I'm a moon lover. And it's called Kissing the Smiling Moon. And we have a YouTube link.
We have a recording of this. So I've put the link up on the board, and this is Phil now with his piece.
It's a poem by Phil the Poet called Kissing the Smiling Moon. Spread your wings and rise up to kiss the smiling moon. Plucking the strings of a harp with a romantic tune. Let the air guide you to the epicenter of your wildest dreams, with the skies like sapphire robe without seams. Soaring with the eagle amongst the mountain tops, inhaling the sweet scent of fresh harvested crops. Taking in the breathless landscape before your eyes, which silences the selfish groans and tireless sighs. Glide among a starlit backdrop of an early evening dance. Close your eyes. Take this once-in-a-lifetime offer of romance. Dare you take his hand? Dare you look deep into his soul? Is he the one who calms your storms to make your rivers flow? Taste the freedom as you begin to spread your wings. His kiss will revive you, or your heart playfully sings. End poem.
Well, just lovely, and it's always great to hear a poem read by the poet. And this is the first time I hear Phil's voice, and he recited it so beautifully. And it's always different when you recite someone else's poem than listening to him, because he knows the feeling, he knows what he's talking about. He gives it, you know, he brings the words to life because they're out of his mind, his heart, part of his, you know, his musing. And so really, I was so happy that he sent me the YouTube recording, and I'm so happy to hear his voice. He's such a real gentleman. And we are good friends, and I'm very pleased and to hear his voice for the first time. And I love the poem because I'm a moon lover, and I have a couple of poems about moon. And, you know, I really like the word spread your wings. I have it in a couple of my poems. I'm always speaking about people spreading their wings, you know.
Birds
spreading their wings. So wings for me are very, very meaningful. And I have a poem I don't remember the title now, but it was like a dedication on one of New Year's to all poems. It's called Wings for Life. It's called Wings for Life. And, you know, it was dedicated to my fellow poets. And I'm telling them at the end, you know, it's what means I don't remember the exact word. Just spread your wings and fly one more flight in the field of dreams. That's what we're doing, actually. We are spreading our wings, flying in the field of dreams. So this poem for me is everything, because I love the moon. I'm a moon lover. I always talk about us as writers spreading our wings, or birds spreading their wings, someone spreading their wings, eagles spreading their wings, so, and inhaling the fresh air, and so it's beautiful, and landscape, and it's exactly, he's drawing metaphors from nature. Yes, AP, you want to say something?
I do. I was just going to say, talking about your fellow poets and people that we get inspiration from. I'd like to welcome 202 to the program. How are you going?
Hi, Pete. Hi, Osama.
Hi, Murphy. Hi, Murphy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, I have Easter, by the way.
I'm sorry, Osama, what was that?
But I'm telling
happy
you, happy Easter.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I did
you
a lot
should
of...
Tell us, yeah, you should tell us what you told me. You should tell APN, our listeners, how you spent your Easter, because it was, like, very beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it was really nice. Sometimes it's interesting with vacations. Sometimes you need a vacation from your vacation, right, when you... travel around a lot, but you know what I did is I went down to Florida and met up with a lot of my family, and we got up very early. I know you had talked about midnight mass for Christmas, but on Easter what
yeah.
we do is we get up early for sunrise mass, and it is
wow.
actually very beautiful as the sun comes up, and very spiritual. So it was
yeah,
great,
lovely.
Great Easter, and it's great to be with family.
Yeah, you told me about it, and I thought we should share it with the other listeners, because tonight we are celebrating the last days of Ramadan, Easter, and spring, and thank God you made it, you know, we are halfway, but
yes,
you made it in the right time, you made it in the right time, because
okay.
I think you will be reading our next poem, I think so. Anyway, did you listen? Yes, AP?
It's perfect timing, because Murphy
yes,
was next up.
Exactly. Perfect timing. Murphy, did you listen to the poem we were reading by Phil the Poet from UK, Kissing the Smiling Moon?
Yes, I liked it a lot. You know, actually, I love just the smiling moon, because it really is smiling. You know, it's almost like when I pass a dog on the street, a dog seems to be smiling at me too, but I'm not sure. the smiling moon is always kind of comforting, I think, when you look up,
yeah.
especially at a full moon.
Yeah.
And I love the soaring eagle, you know, over the landscape. It's really actually a very romantic poem.
Yes.
What's the line I really like? The one who calms your storms to make your rivers flow. I think that's really
yes.
beautiful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that says it all about the one you're with, you know, that's the one. And, loved it.
Yeah. Actually, it's very romantic and very delightful. And, I always have a first impression when I read a poem. So I write it in my comment, a comment for the poet. So my comment was, I'm a moon lover, and I truly enjoyed this lovely, delightful moon song that flowed beautifully into rivers of romanticism. So, yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. And, I love nature. I love romance. I love love, actually, guys. And I'm a spiritual person, and I speak about love. I'm speaking universal love, about the love you can, that flows from someone's heart in his words and can reach, touch other people's hearts. And I always say that the best poetry is written from the heart to the heart. But of course, as professional writers, we also, it's important also the structure, the language, the theme, using poetic devices. But at the end of the day, the whole thing should be composed in a way that reaches also others, because we do write to express ourselves, but also to reach out to others. And this is one of the poems that, I found a lot of beautiful things in it, the romanticism, the nature, the beautiful choice of words, the structure, and everything. So thanks, Phil, and happy happy Easter, happy spring, happy life. Thank you, my dear friend. AP, did you comment on this poem? Would you like to say something before we move on?
I love the stars and the moon and the sky, and this poem, you know, it's a very romantic poem, and it basically goes back and talks about people's freedom and expresses that with regard to the skies. And Phil's got a lovely style. It's just slightly restrained, and his speaking voice slightly restrained too. And so it just, you know, I just think it's a very beautiful piece, very elegantly written.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I love his poetry, and he's a wonderful, wonderful person. And thank you, Phil, for sharing with us this beauty. Anyway, so Murphy, you're just in time to read Pixie's poem. You know, tonight I told you we are celebrating end of Ramadan, spring, Easter, and Natural Poetry Month. So we are, the theme nature was, you know, the main theme tonight, but we also read other things, you know. So anyway, so it's time for you to read to us Field of Silence. And it's a beautiful poem, a silver winning by Pixie. She's also from United States, from the United States. I'm not sure of the gender, actually, guys. So it's by the poet Pixie. Sometimes, you know, the username, if I don't know the person, I'm not sure of the gender. So yeah, a lot of time I made, when I first started on old poetry, very, very stupid mistakes, and I've learned from them. So you go ahead, Miss. Really? You won't believe it, how funny it was.
That's the story.
Murphy?
Okay, Field of Silence. Shadow gray sprouts of grasses as white purplish orchids and cream-tinged lilies break out from dense ground. A hueless sky stretches across the whole valley of flora, entirely void of astronomy, a blank expanse. Dry horizon and shredded as a dark bird flies spans the view, tearing open the sheet skies and flooding the world with pink. The grass is no longer pale, the flowers no longer faded, for the field that was once silent is now screaming with saturation.
Beautiful. You know, Murphy, how strange it is that the same theme, you know, could be expressed in so many ways, like we read about five poems with the theme of nature, and they're nearly speaking about the same thing, the flowers, the fragrance, the flora, the valleys of flora, or, you know, the landscapes, you know, but each has his own vocabulary. Each has his own images and way of, you know, and writing form and writing style. So this is, you know, this always makes me feel that I always say words are endless, really. Words are endless. It's infinity. And each one has his own vocabulary, his own style, his own, and we could be speaking about exactly the same thing, but never two poems like each other. So this is fascinating. The world of poetry is fascinating. I always believe a word is sacred, and the use of word is, could, you know, I believe God created this universe with the word, be so it is. So words are sacred, words are beautiful, and words are endless. What do you think, AP?
Yeah, look, it's quite lovely, this poem, Osama. I think we all have different metaphors for different things, and just the words used here are I think quite beautiful. It's a piece that you can read multiple times and get multiple meanings out of, and I really love that.
Yes, it's beautiful. And really, and I, It's also, it's talking, I always think that we are into fields of dreams. And I was just saying that we poets, we spread our wings into fields of dreams. So this is also, and she, the poet is also like drawing metaphors from nature, like all the other, and, drawing sketches and painting with words. So it's a very, very beautiful, solid, very well-written poem. And thank you, Pixie, for sharing it with us. You know, guys, our next poem is really celebrating a very famous poet and inspired by a very famous poet and written by my protege, John from UK, fallen minstrel, and we have a couple of collaborations together, which are fantastic because he's into Arabic classical poetry as well, and he's an intellectual, and he's really very close friend, and I love him like a son, and this poem is very serious, and it's inspired by Kafka. Do you know Kafka, Franz?
Yes.
Kafka? Okay, and he's,
yes,
a Bohemian who spoke in German. He lived in Germany. And, after reading the poem, because it's a very serious one, I would like you, pasted a summary, a brief about Franz Kafka. And then I asked fallen minstrel, I asked John to tell me, to express himself of what inspired this poem or what's behind writing this poem. And there, all this is in the notes. Can you see it, AP?
Yes.
AP?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so
did you want, to do those notes first or the poem first, Ms. Arnold?
No, I think we should do the poem first, and then we can read. I have a short notes about Franz Kafka, and then I have John's notes about the background of his inspiration, and then we can comment if you don't mind. So this is the celebration. We celebrated Ramadan, Easter, spring. Now this is the poem celebration of the National Poetry Month.
Okay, well, let us go then to the piece, which is the Parable of Sight 2, and it goes, yes, a little bit like this. Joseph K. raises his eyes to the height of a silver dome. Flames bemuse his senses, figures bemuse his mind. The nameless angel, patron of the city of his birth, guardian of the temple of wisdom, a threshold which has not been breached for nearly 2,000 years. A filigree etched into the stone beneath his feet, the street's cave has known since birth. Bombs congeal into bullets, bullets to mere words, words to thought and thought to man. In another country, these tenets are reversed. Man without knowledge is a shadow, a stumbling drunk, spiralling among the natives of the city of the blind. In the kingdom of sight, the temple is not barred, but her citizens do not yearn to trespass. End poem.
AP? Hello?
Osama, yes, I can hear you.
Yes, would you like to read the notes?
I will. I'll just go down to the notes now. And this is, I'll read firstly the notes that you wrote about Franz Kafka. It was born 3rd of July, 1883, and June 1924. Was a German-speaking Bohemian novelist and short story writer, widely regarded as one of the major figures of 20th century literature. His philosophy on the purpose of human existence is faithful to the ideas of existentialism. Man is a fragile entity of insignificant possibilities. Now, we've then also got the notes from Fallen Minstrel. Did you want me to read those too, Osama?
Yes, yes, please, yes.
Okay. His notes are, what I love about Kafka is his attention to detail in the most meticulous way. often nightmarish scenes of nebulous heights of bureaucracies, in most cases the ladders of power. In my case, in this poem, the finger is pointed at the temple of knowledge and the lack of interest in the inner or religious life that many people in the West seem to hold. In the poem, it suggests in another country acceptance into the temple of God where true wisdom is received. Entrance is not barred, but the citizens of that nation do not desire admittance. But in this country, an imagined country, maybe referenced in the poem, the temple is guarded by a stone angel with orbs of fire, whose citizens do yearn to enter and gain access to learning and spiritual improvement. End comment.
Yeah.
There you go,
Sarah. Yeah, this is a very serious poem, very intellectual and full of layers. And it's, you know, he is a very knowledgeable young man, very talented. His poetry is very unique, and he always speaks about important matters, you know, and philosophies and, you know, religious and spiritual icons and symbols. And so it's really interesting, and he likes Kafka very much. So I thought this poem is really important, and I wanted to introduce also Kafka to our listeners, like an international figure, a great writer who's very well known and was like one of the most important in the 20th century, and his work is still inspiring. And he really, he reflects an era of philosophy. And, you know, when people were turning from the classical thinking into new philosophies like existentialism and other nihilism. And, you know, later on came Paul Sartre, Camus, was like a continuation of this movement of a new philosophies into a new, different century. So he's very important. And the poem of John was really into the depth of this philosophy and Kafka. And I like very much, these stanzas, the last two stanzas really were meaningful for me. Man without knowledge is a shadow, stumbling drunk, spiraling among the native of the city of blind. This is, for me, that is, this is, we have this concept in the East that a man without knowledge is blind, actually. He doesn't see, because knowledge gives insight to a larger perspective of understanding, of philosophies, of for example, for me, whatever I believe in, that doesn't stop me for trying to know more about other people's belief or other people's understanding. And actually, I love philosophy. I used to, when I was only 17, bring philosophy and the psychology. I used to bring these books, even in high school, the history of philosophy, the history of psychology. And I studied philosophy and psychology in high school. And so they are part of my interest. So the more you know, the more you understand, you don't have to agree, but at least to understand and accept other people's ideas, other people's thoughts. This is knowledge. Knowledge is not to know what you know. Knowledge is to know what other people as well knows. Because I believe that every human experience is of value. And, because each experience is different from the other, especially among thinkers. And they just make you see things in a wider perspective, the bigger picture. And so this is why I think this poem is very important. And also Kafka is a very important figure in literature and a philosopher. writer and philosopher and an era, a beginning of a new era of philosophy. Murphy?
Yes, I thought it was very interesting reading, especially he's writing it with an existential thought in mind. You know, I like how he talks of you know, the blind and the sight that we all have.
Yes.
and the knowledge, but it's interesting to me because all of those things really can be left up to interpretation as far as what is meaningful, right? What is meaningful knowledge? Someone may think of another as being blind where, of course, you know, they think they have full sight, right? So visiting a temple or not visiting a temple or a man without knowledge is a shadow, a stumbling drunk.
Yes.
He may or may not have the secret that you don't have, you know? And I think sometimes, you know, with knowledge especially, it's something that's not always so clear, you know. And the more we learn, sometimes it's good to take a step back to a simpler set of thoughts, I think, and, you know, for what's most meaningful. And,
Yeah,
so I like it a lot. I feel like a lot of these things are open to interpretation now, yeah.
Exactly, and this is a very serious write because it's full of layers of philosophy and his understanding of Kafka's work because he read all of Kafka's novels. So there is much more to this poem than we can understand. You know,
right.
We're trying. Anyway. So, really, really, I'm so much inspired by the last two stanzas, like even the choice of words, really. And you know what, Murphy, you said something interesting. Sometimes when we don't understand, or even, I believe that knowledge is very important. It's very important. And I always told my children that because it makes you see more, understand more. But the Sufis, you know, have a philosophy which is very interesting. They say, you know, the more you know, the more you know, the more you understand that you know nothing, that you don't know anything. Really, this is, you know, briefly, the Sufi philosophy. You know, I read such a big book about Sufi philosophy, and I was stunned. That was many years ago. That the end sentence was: the more you know, you understand that you don't know anything. The little you know, you know, the more you know.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, this is this is what you
That's
were saying, Mary.
The great wisdom that we're all essentially clueless.
Exactly. This is real wisdom. AP, would you like to comment on this poem, please?
Look, it's a very complex layered poem, as you said, and I think absent reading Kafka and knowing Kafka's philosophy, it feels like you just got the first one or two layers of a five-layered sort of cake, you know. And,
exactly,
and so
yes.
I think it's brilliantly written. As I said, I think there's probably a whole heap of things I'm missing because I'm not aware of his work.
Yeah, that's what I thought exactly. But I have an idea about Kafka and, you know, and about his work and about his philosophy. So, and I understand, John, and where this is coming from. And this is a very serious write. And this is why I made it a point to give a brief about Kafka and to ask John to explain to us exactly what's behind this, the background of this poem. So I hope this was a little complex, but this was serious poetry, guys.
I have gone and put my second poem up on the board. Now, there is a reason.
Okay.
There's always a reason. There's a reason. And I know that Kafka wrote in German, and I know that when he was being educated, he learnt Greek and Latin as his languages. And I did learn some Latin as well. And we haven't had any sort of non-English sort of words so far, which is unusual for one of our shows. So I used to sing mainly in Latin, which was why I learnt Latin. Because some of the great pieces of music, particularly choral music, are written in Latin. And so, for example, the famous piece by Mozart, Mozart's Requiem, in 1792, was written in Latin and finished by Süssmayr after his death. But that's one of the songs I'm very familiar with. So I've got Requiem up on the board, and it does have a little bit of Latin in it, but the Latin pieces are translated below. So this poem goes a little bit like this. Spin moss a novelisk's lining here a path on earth's wrath. Storm separators in between winds craze, I follow in your slate as the woodwind plays. Cobalt turns into umbrellas as whistling the tune, stoneway through clouds, seeking out the moon. Shadows fighting while two stumbling ahead, I can but watch, harnessed within my dread. Dies Irae, the angels are singing past the gates. Dies Ila, orchestra rain, while tension waits. Kyrie eleison brings the lightning to this day. Donna Elsa Requiem, by the darkness I will pray. Then descends silence and your body does arise. Hurt in night's lips, you are buzzing like Eve flies. Echoes of a chamber here for moments cause. I'm left alone in silence to these rambling moors. In poem.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. You know something? I have a poem. It's called Mozart Requiem, because Mozart, for me, is, you know, a great musician, and the story of his life is very touching. I might read it, you know, after we discuss your poem, but also Latin is the origin of many languages, like French, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, and people used to write in Latin in the old days, like poetry, theater, so many things, and of course prayers. Kyrie eleison is a word that is used in prayers. I hear it in churches here in Egypt, you know. So this is a part of prayers, Kyrie eleison. And this is a poem which is very classic, and you know, it's really beautiful, and the integration of the Latin goes so well with the theme of the poem and the spirituality and this is my favorite line. Kyrie eleison brings the lightning to this day. Donna El Requiem, by the darkness I will pray. So, yeah, this is so beautiful, and it's different from your usual style, but I think it's really very well written, and, integrating the Latin within it gave it a special feel, and a very spiritual one as well, and being inspired by Mozart's Requiem as well. This is for me very meaningful, and I love it. So I'm gonna go find my poem until Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy comments. Okay.
Okay. I love the feeling of kind of entering the next dimension with this, and the moss especially. I really love moss, especially in like South Carolina or Florida, some of the hanging moss. And some of the you know, the trees, and it just, I kind of look at that along the this path that I'm seeing in this rite, and it's very interesting to have all that together, and supporting it also is the Latin phrasing, and you know, it just all seems to work together, you know, for Requiem. Journey. And you know, especially with Latin, a lot of times there are a lot of good Latin phrases. A lot of time they're very pithy, and I guess over time, you know, the ones that we still have today are the really good ones. You know, they mean a lot. Of course, people think of carpe diem and things like that. But there are a lot of great Latin phrases, and these are interesting too. I really, how did you know how to pronounce them?
Me, yeah, because I have a little bit of knowledge about Latin, and my children studied Latin because they studied English literature. So when you study English literature, you study Latin as well. So you know, it was very inspiring for me because I love Latin. I love languages. And the way, it reminded me of my form of Mozart's Requiem, because you know, Mozart he was a genius, actually. And the story, do you know about his life history, Murphy? You know about Mozart? You know his life story? Okay. And there was this movie, Amadeus. Have you seen it?
I think I've heard the song.
Okay. No, but this movie about his, have you seen it, AP, Amadeus?
That's a brilliant movie. Brilliantly done, Stama.
Brilliant, brilliant. One of my favorite ever. And I think it won so many Oscars. Anyway, so I put my poem, Mozart's Requiem, in response to your Requiem. Okay.
Yes.
You got it?
Got it there. Yes.
Okay. Murphy, you got it?
It's on the list now?
Yes. No, it's on
on
the board, group's message board.
Yes, I got it. Thank you.
Okay. I will read it now. And then Murphy will read his new poem. He wrote a new poem, which I loved very much. I didn't comment about it yet because I was very busy yesterday, but I will. But I read it, Murphy. Anyway, so here we go. Mozart's Requiem. I fear I'm writing a requiem for myself, a spark of light in ashes, diminished by mediocrity. I'm going to say from the beginning. I fear I'm writing a requiem for myself, a spark of light in ashes, diminished by mediocrity. Amadeus knew it was his funeral. The mysterious messenger from the dark underworld did not reveal his identity. In the shadow of death, tuned to heavenly voices, the miraculous musician, Mozart, God's instrument, poured the greatness of his soul. Composed the Requiem in D minor, cellos, basses, violins, organ, the vocal forces of soprano, contralto, tenor, and the choir of angels, a mass celebration, ete messe. Mediocrities everywhere, cried Antonioni, Salieri, Mozart, Mozart, forgive your assassin. End of poem. It's about, you know, the first line is a quote by Mozart. When he was assigned to write this requiem, he was very ill and he felt he was dying and he was penniless. And, you know, Salieri, in this story, Salieri went to him. He knew that he's going to kill him by writing this requiem. So what he said, his quote was, I fear I'm writing a requiem for myself. So, this was, for me, very, you know, moving, and his life story. And, you know, he was buried in the anonymous people graves. He this killed him. This writing this record really killed him. AP, do you have, because you have knowledge of the Requiem of Mozart, would you like to talk about it and this poem?
Yeah, look, it's an amazing piece of music, Mozart's Requiem. It really is. It blends four incredibly strong voices together in terms of lines into a finished whole. And it's a little bit like cars weaving on a racetrack, and sometimes the soprano leads, sometimes the tenor leads, and sometimes the bass leads, and sometimes the alto leads, and they're sort of jockeying for position. They're going down this racetrack with all of them sort of, as they go past, you know, being in complete synchronization, and the melodies then are just really quite beautiful. And so the music itself is really quite beautiful. And Mozart found a way of making an orchestra and a set of voices do something that just moves people every time you hear it, and it's even more of a moving experience when you're part of it, whether you're playing it or whether you're singing. And so I found it a remarkable piece. It's a wonderful piece to listen to, and an incredible piece to be part of. And it's one of the wonders of the world in terms of a piece of music.
Exactly. I love classicals, but this is one of my favorite, actually. You know, I have it attached in the my author's note for people to listen to it after they read my poem. And you know, this line, you know, the before last one, when I am saying how he composed it, and the vocals and the instruments he used, and, you know, when I'm saying a choir of angels, because I believe that he was, like, inspired by a great spirit, and that there were angels around him. He was dying, actually.
Yes.
And the last line, when I say a mass celebration, a mass is the prayers in a church. It's called a mass. Ete messe is when the mass is finished. The priest says, ete messe, it's over. The mass is over. So I'm referring that this was his last inspiration, and that there were angels around him, and he was dying writing it, and it was like prayers, and and it ended there. I'm speaking in a Christian language, you know what I mean, AP. This was, I just wanted to explain this line, a mass celebration, etimetie. It's a Latin word. The masses in church are always in Latin. And when they end, they say etimetie, the mass, the prayers is over. So this was also a reference to the end of Mozart's life. So, yeah. So your poem also reminded me of this, right, and reminded me of this great, great music and Requiem by Mozart. And so, you see, we are inspired by the same things. Murphy, would you like to comment?
Sure. I really wish I knew more about Mozart, because I know how famous he is. it does seem... like this is, like AP says, about a wonder of the world, and wrapped up in his spirituality, and you know, even before, you know, talking about how meaningful something may be interpreted, this seems like a most meaningful expression that he has here, and almost couldn't be more meaningful. And I really can't wait to follow that link, actually, and listen to it.
And maybe you should watch the movie as well. It's called Amadeus.
The movie?
It's a classical,
okay.
And it's brilliant, brilliant movie.
I definitely will now.
You might even find that you know it because it's the tunes and some of the refrains from the piece have made their way into common sort of lingo. So yeah. I'm surprised if you don't actually recognize large
some
parts
of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And first you can listen to the music because to the Requiem itself, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And I know you'll enjoy it. Okay. So thank you, AP. So, yes, Murphy?
Mozart was assassinated? Is that how he died?
No. He was very ill. Very ill.
He died
naturally. He was like... very celebrated because he started, his father was the head of the orchestra in the Austrian court, yes, AP, Austrian court.
Yes.
And Mozart's talents, started when he was only 4 years old. And he was celebrated all over Europe, but his lifestyle was very tragic, very different, and he was unconventional. He was a mad artist, very gifted, and he wouldn't conform. So he ended, and he was very envied, and, there was like a plot to ruin him and destroy him, and he became very ill, very poor. And so this is why I'm telling you to watch the movie, because it's an amazing movie, and his life is like really worth watching and understanding and knowing. But first you can listen to the Requiem from my author's note, and then when you have time, I know you won't regret watching that movie. It's one of my favorite ever. Me and my husband watched it like a thousand times. Because we are artists, and we sympathize. Anyway, guys. So now we have yes, Murphy.
I was going to say I very rarely watch movies these days, just because usually I'm not real impressed with movies that are out there. But this one,
of course, I will definitely. Oh.
I rarely
watch movies these days, but this is a classic, and it's brilliant. It won many Oscars, and, this is a period drama. So I always enjoy, the most movies I enjoy are period dramas or movies, based on novels, important, famous novels, or on the biography of famous people. These are the movies I enjoy the most, or historical ones. So anyway, so I know you will not regret this. I saw it like 100 times, and it still lives in my heart. The story. Anyway. Yeah, so guys, we have now a poem by our dear friend Titus, and it's a SoundCloud, and it's called "Come Find the Many Lenses." Oh yes, I'm sorry, guys. Yes. We're gonna do Murphy.
Yes,
exactly, because it's beautiful. It's a new poem. He wrote only yesterday. So every time Murphy writes a poem, we have to have a celebration. Because he doesn't write often.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, go ahead, Murphy. Sorry.
This is for a contest on self-love. So I thought it was interesting. And actually, I really loved reading all the other poems. There's really a lot to say about self-love, and it's almost more interesting than just a regular contest on love. Self-love is very complex, I guess.
Yeah.
So I call this Forever Friend. Miraculous composite, each pea its own pod. A lifetime gift is self, and always present. A self-loving requisite, each path a shared way, the given and giving, arms unlocked, chain of cells. How's the weather? Whether external monsoons of lambast or balmy skies of praise, my rain dance always within, steady warm sun of approval. A wanted or wanting vibe, an unknown cup of tea. A forever friend's company. It's okay. I'm with me.
Yeah, I love the ending. It's okay. I'm with me. You know, Murphy, yeah, you're coming a long way in writing poetry, and this is really a good one. This is really a good one because it's not, you know, just straightforward. It's still, you know, it's real. You always write about, you are always real to yourself and to others, and this is something I respect very much. And I believe that if one doesn't love himself, then he's not capable of loving anyone. This is really what I believe. If you don't love yourself, if you are not in peace with yourself, you're not in peace with anyone. Or you can't, because actually others can never be the source of peace. Others always want something of you, or they want something for themselves, or they want you to do something that suits them or whatever. So if you're not in peace with yourself to understand that you are your only friend, that you have to stand firm and to stand solid and to help yourself, help others, and don't let others get to you and put you down or exhaust you with their emotions or, you know, so much. So I believe, I always told my children, if you don't love yourself, you don't love, you're not capable of love. If you're not in peace with yourself, you won't find peace around you. So this mm-hmm. is a very meaningful poem. You know, I like this line, a lifetime gift itself, an always present present. True. Because even right. if all the people around you love you, but they won't be there for you every time. And, you know, and if you're right, tired, right. if you're ill, if you're exhausted, if you have problems, if you have struggles, you are the only one who can help yourself, comfort yourself, try to make things work for yourself. So I absolutely agree with you, and I, you know, what's nice about contests is sometimes we find the prompt that, you know, clicks or just brings out something in you that it's in the back of your mind, but it's not, you know, it's not obvious sometimes. It's just in the back of your mind, something you feel, something you think, something you experience. So prompt sometimes that click, you know, it brings this thought out. So I also like the last two lines. A forever friend's company, it's okay. I'm with me. That's your humorous side. You know, you just have to. This is your signature, Murphy. You know, at the end, make fun of or just be humorous. So this is Murphy's signature. I love it. It's beautiful, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. AP?
Thanks, Osama.
Yeah, I think you're right, Osama. I mean, I can remember when I was very young and I went on a trip to Europe for a couple of months, and the thing that struck me about that was how consistent everything was in terms of the way I viewed the world, and that I'd shifted location, but I hadn't shifted away from me. And
yes.
that... You know, that was the consistent thing that was going on here. You know, the world was completely different, but I was the same. And I think for me, the more that you go on with life, the more you realise how important it is to actually be, use the word at peace with yourself, Osama. Mm. And I think that's right, because if there's a war going on within yourself, then there's no way you can recognise peace outside that. And I think too many people, and we've all seen them, are troubled souls, as you would say, and they're not at peace with themselves. And you can see it.
Exactly.
You can feel it as soon as you're a person. you can get that sense as to whether they're comfortable within their own two shoes or not. And it's really, really important, you know. And I you don't read enough poems about it. So Murphy, it's a very, very important poem about a very important subject that we spend too little time on. And that's us.
Yes. And he expressed it beautifully, really. I love it. And, you know, in a very, very elegant and respectable way. It's not, self-love is not about ego. It's not about being selfish.
No,
it's about being solid. It's about being in peace with yourself. Because I've seen people who are not in peace with themselves. They're miserable. Their life is miserable. And they're full of struggles. Our lives, we are all, you know, there, it's all about tests and trials, and, you know, things that bring you down, things that change you. But you are the only one who can break this chains. You are the only one who can be there for you to make you stronger, to give you strength, to help you get over this, to help you be solid, to help you, you know. So it's a very important subject, and it's about something we all go through, something each one of us, you know, if you're not in peace with yourself, if you don't love yourself, and it's not about selfishness, it's not about ego, it's about being balanced, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So this is really an important subject, and we can't all write it the way you did, very, very nicely, really. I enjoyed it. And I love your signature at the end. And the ending, Forever Friends Company. It's okay. I'm with me. So this is
I would just add, you know, part of my thought with this is just that, you know, we're all incredibly valuable. And that value doesn't change from day to day. It is a constant, and it's not based upon, you know, what our latest achievements are or failures or anything like that. We are valuable, and that's it. But there are sometimes, you know, people do seem to kind of ration their approval of others based upon those type of things. You know, what have you done for me lately? I just feel like that's like self approval really is the most important, because sometimes relying on others for that, you're just going to be disappointed, I think.
Exactly.
It's so important.
Even of people relying on people who love you, you're going to be disappointed.
Right.
How about people who don't like you, or who don't love you, or hate you? Really, Murphy, I want to say something important. You know, befriending you, knowing you has been a wonderful experience, because you're such an honest, good person, and, you know, helpful, supportive, kind, and you're consistent. You know, there are people who can be all these nice things for a while, and then you see the other face of the moon. But you are a full moon, my dear Murphy.
Thank you so much.
You're blushing or something? Are you blushing now?
I'm glad this is not on video.
Okay. Really, I appreciate your friendship and your participation, especially that Cal is mostly not with us now. So your presence makes the show more lively, and you just fit in so beautifully. And you know something, I feel it. I have the sixth sense. The day we met, I knew. I told you that. I know that we're going to get along. Okay, that's wonderful. Okay, I think we have time to broadcast Titus SoundCloud. Or we don't have that. We do. All right. But Titus is a British great poet, one of the best in all poetry, a dear friend, and a great, a real gentleman, and a brilliant writer. and we have his poem now. Where is it? Let me find it.
On the board. Come Shine,
yes,
the Many,
okay,
Lanterns.
Come Shine, the Many Lanterns. I love the title, yes.
And I have the sound card in front of me, so I'm going to play that now.
Okay.
Come Shine, the Many Lanterns. Had I turned to think again what I'd have missed, if you had not turned either, now having surfaced, given this blessing, to have found many light hours with you, let us take for instance these sunflowers. Imagine the height to which the dawn shall arise. Given the radiance of morning, it opened our eyes to bless the day. The yawning display, it just speaks in a language that is apparent. Allay the twin peaks, the love for each other to bring this redemption. For supposing my friends, and never did I mention, fading into the distance were reasons we stand tall. Keeping faith, it rejuvenates the spirit within us all. Contains a past, the first and last it has recognized others who stand out from the rest, the unknown, who are represented, and a backdrop it has shown diligence beholds the rudiment to acquiring minds. When freedom comes to enlighten, it kind of finds an assortment of seeds. For this modesty, no trees deserve a place other than for my sake. To please, best we place ourselves like the sun does at noon. The moon can wait, for my darkness cometh soon.
Beautiful recitation. Yeah, beautiful recitation as always. I love to hear him recite his own poetry, and I love his accent, and I love his voice, and really, and I love his poetry, and he's a wonderful person. And I just want to mention that this poem is dedicated to Bob Ross, who seems was an artist, a painter. And I'm not very familiar with him, but it seems that he was, you know, a really brilliant person. And it is, this poem is dedicated to him. But also, this poem is like, you know, contains or complements all what we've been talking about tonight: nature, friendship, talent, gifts, beauty, so many, you know, spirituality. It's like it's talking about all the things, keeping faith, the spirit, spirituality, everything. So it's like it complements all what we've been talking about tonight. So just beautiful. And I leave the Murphy to comment.
Yes, I love this poem. I love, it's written for Bob Ross also, very, very great. I remember watching him a long time ago, and he would always be very, really felt like, you know, genius at work. I mean, he would paint, and he would just talk in such a calming way, and it was just really, you really felt privileged as if you were in the room with him. While he's creating a real work of art, you know, and he's like letting you in as he's speaking to you. I felt privileged, you know, to you know, watch his show.
What do you know about Bob Ross? Because I'm not really familiar with him. He's American British. Tell me more about him, please.
He was on American TV.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, he's American. I don't know a lot of the, you know, the bio of him, but just that his show was, you know, really amazing. And I know a lot of people watched him. It was very, it was like a really calming and, you know, a peaceful time to spend you know, mm-hmm. with him. And especially for someone who's not a painter, and, you know, I can really, I don't know, it just seemed like really a privilege to be with him and see him create, you know, to actually create something that's really beautiful, and you know that is so beyond your own talents is, I don't know, it's really, really a you know, satisfying experience.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know what? It seems I'm going to look him up, but it seems that he wasn't only a talented painter. He was always a gifted soul, because there are a couple of quotes in Titus A.N. here, like quotes by Bob Ross. One of them says, "We don't make mistakes. We just have happy accidents." And the other one is, "It's the imperfections that make something beautiful. That's what makes it different and unique from everything else." Obviously, he was, you know, also he had his own experience. He was an artist and a spiritual person. I love the coach. And he looks really like a very, very nice person. So I will certainly look his show up, and that was really interesting. I always like it when we introduce other artists, whether poets, writers, thinkers, philosophers, and painters, and we all are, you know, all this is inspiration. We all inspire each other. I have many poems inspired by Van Gogh or other painters as well. So this is also inspired by Bob Ross' paintings. And there is a painting here attached to the poem as well. It's about sunflowers. And I have a poem about sunflowers because sunflowers in ancient Egypt were sacred. You know, they were always painted on, you know, the temples and the, in the ancient Egyptian, they considered them sacred flowers because they always still to the sun. And so, yeah, so this is very interesting, very beautiful. And the poem is about spirituality, it's about art, it's about friendship, it's about art, and it's about talent, and it's about enlightenment. And it's really beautiful poem that wraps up all what we've been talking about, guys, tonight. AP, would you like to comment, please?
Well, I knew nothing, I have to be honest, about Bob Ross, so I have looked him up. And he was a person who had a military career. He was a medical records technician. He was a medical records technician at an air base in Alaska. And he developed this quick painting technique during his daily work break, so he could do a painting while he wasn't working. And he left the military and he sort of scuttled around, learned a bit more about painting, and somehow that turned into him having a TV show called Joy of Painting on PBS for about 11 years, which was incredibly successful. And he unfortunately, he was a heavy smoker, and of course he was around paints all his life, and he had lymphoma and passed away of lymphoma back in age 52, only 52, in 1995, so back a number of years ago now. But left an amazing legacy. He said he did about 30,000 paintings in the time that he's alive, which is quite remarkable in terms of number. And I think the thing that he left was also probably that sense of personal style that Murphy was talking about, a very calming influence, and somebody that you knew what you were going to get when you turned on that television screen, and that's why he was so popular.
Yeah. Okay. And you know what? Also, I think having his own show was about painting a full painting in this duration of the show. Which is Murphy? Yeah, which is amazing because painters, they could, a painting could take hours, days, months, and years, but he had this gift that he could paint a full painting in duration, the short duration, whatever it was, an hour. Mostly, I'm sure no talk shows are more than an hour. And look at the painting, the sunflower painting. It's like so beautiful, really beautiful. I love it. So I'm going to look him up. This is interesting. I'm always happy to learn about new icons, you know, musicians, painters, writers. So thank you, Titus, for sharing this poem with us. It was beautiful. And this was lovely. And, you know, it contained all what we were speaking about all night: art, poetry, painting, music, spirituality, friendship. So this is brilliant. Do we have a time for, can we end our show with this poem by Cal, like we always start? With Cal and end with Cal?
Yes, I think we can. Okay. We don't have much time, but yes, we can.
Okay,
so
but can
one
we say our goodbyes?
D minimums.
Well, what's it? The minimums? Okay. River Blue. What? No, this is not the one. I have the wrong. This is what? Sorry, I got the wrong one, guys. Let me see.
Okay.
The one, which one is it? Here it is. Golden Rooms.
Golden Rooms on the board while you say farewell to everybody. And I am going to try and find this.
Okay. Thank you, AP. Thank you, Murphy. And thank you to all our listeners all over the world. And we are going to keep celebrating and see you in 2 weeks. Murphy, bye.
Thank you, Osama. And would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoy the show with everyone each time. It's really great, the poetry and also the commentary. And I always learn a lot, which I'm really grateful for and enjoy it so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I should say thank you too to yourself, Murphy, for always for your contributions and for your commentary, which is always both insightful and humble. And that is something special when you have both. So my thanks for that. And my thank you to you, Osama, for your always spirited comments and discussions and insights with a joy to hear. So my thank you to you. My thank you to Cal for his pieces. And we're going to finish with one of his called In Golden Rooms. And as Osama said, we will see everybody in a couple of weeks' time. So thank you very much. Okay. So bye, Osama.
Bye, AP. Bye, Murphy. See you guys.
Bye. Have a good
night.
Bye,
everybody.
Bye.
And I walked in your shoes until silhouettes and soles wore down to my broken bones. And I sit here now in a refugee camp looking at fucking despair. The cradled roses are for someone else, billowing bad moons rise, forcing my crippled smile, holding up broken limbs, picking scabs, becoming scars. I look into a mirror for more prescriptions, swallowing jagged popcorn pills, meal madness, spitting out suspended essence, smothering flames extinguish slowly, being cruelly aware of darkness. The prince leans forward, shaking silver spoons from the senator's son, green eyes slit and slant, flaring fans, rambling rondo, slows, spinning, reeking reels in dusted cinema. Tilted violins play dirges in dark holes, revolving revolution with plastic palace czars as guests lie naked in shame, flowing with winter wine. Rose candles swaying flicker, light lick, graffiti walls reflecting millions as empty flagons shine, couples whirling in trance. Near midnight meadows, strange screams, gut-stricken, grief-bitten, amid hectic music, cocktail talk in golden room.
Cal, bye everybody from Soul Asylum. We'll
bye.
See you at the same time,
bye.
Same two words. Bye, Murphy. Bye, Summer. Talk soon.
Bye, APA. Great ending. Bye, Murphy. Bye.